to steer clear of the flu, your best defense is the seasonal influenza vaccine. But producing an effective annual flu shot relies on accurately predicting which flu strains are most likely to infect the population in any given season. It's the 17th of October. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In recent years, researchers have isolated a number of potent flu-neutralizing antibodies produced in our bodies, and there may be headway toward a universal vaccine. Dr. Jonathan Tempty practices family medicine and is on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. He served on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices from 2008 to 2015, including 3 years as chairman, and he currently chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. Dr. Tempty, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Kate. Great pleasure to join you this morning.
Well, let's talk about the variables involved in predicting the severity of a flu season in the U.S. What makes this so tricky?
Well, the challenge is trying to figure out how many people are going to be affected and how severe the actual flu strains in circulation are going to be. Each year, we find that there are typically four primary strains in circulation, all at different levels. And to a large extent, they determine how bad that flu year is going to be.
And I understand that this is tracked very closely. CDC has weekly updates.
Exactly. And in your introduction, mentioning that this is now mid-October, the CDC starts really looking carefully at flu at the beginning of October every year. And the reason being is influenza tends to be a very seasonal virus. And it'd be very, very uncommon for us to see big outbreaks, actually in Wisconsin, before late November or December, and very rarely after about May.
But it can still happen even though it's not in flu season, is that right?
Well, it can still happen, but that's a rare event.
Okay.
And it's triggered by having virtually no immunity to a strain. So, for example, back in 2009 with the pandemic, we had a situation in which virtually nobody had any immunity, and it opened the floodgates for this particular virus.
So as physicians are watching these strains play out, what is happening behind the scenes in making a flu vaccine?
Well, the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control are watching very carefully about what is circulating at the end of the season in the Northern Hemisphere, and also what is happening in the Southern Hemisphere, because we're basically 6 months apart. And in basically February and early March, a decision is made as to which four strains are going to go into the quadrivalent vaccine, that's the vaccine that contains all four strains, or which three strains will go into the trivalent vaccines. And so the decision is made well ahead of the time to give manufacturers the appropriate time to create the vaccines needed, basically 6 to 8 months later.
So you're saying the patterns that we see in illnesses in Australia predict what we might be able to see here in the U.S.?
They predict incompletely, but they're some of the best information. And it's not only Australia, but we look at New Zealand, South Africa, South America, and so on, and try and get the best idea of what strains are likely to be circulating in the 4 to 6 months after the Southern Hemisphere flu season.
Well, and officials with the CDC are cautioning that this year's flu season could be worse than usual based on the predictions on illness patterns in Australia, where we're seeing more children and elderly people getting sick this year than in an average year. What is your prediction for here in the U.S.?
Well, I always hate to put myself out on the line in terms of making predictions, but from what we see right now, I think it's fair to say that we would expect basically an average to moderate influenza season, there was a lot of early speculation triggered by an increase of influenza cases, particularly an influenza A strain in late August and early September. And in fact, there was an increase in cases across the country, but those have actually receded again. So we had this very small little blip occurring in early to mid-September, which has now dropped back. And I can say that nationwide, we're seeing basically an average or a typical year right now, both in terms of number of viruses being isolated out there, the number of cases being reported by physicians, and the rate of hospitalization. So we haven't seen anything dramatic as of yet.
We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Temte. He practices family medicine, is on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. He served on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices for 7 years. And he's with us to discuss flu, the flu vaccine, flu shot. Are you planning to get a flu shot this year? Why or why not? Do you worry about the safety of flu vaccines? Have you ever gone to work sick with the flu or been concerned about coworkers who come to work sick? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings with your question or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Temte, flu shots, they're usually quite reasonable, inexpensive, even free, but over half of all Americans don't bother to get a flu shot. Why? What is going on here?
Well, unlike a lot of other vaccines we have, influenza vaccine has to be given on an annual basis. If we think of our tetanus, diphtheria, booster, those are things that we get as adults at least every 10 years or so. Other vaccines we receive once or twice in our lifetime, but influenza is something that's required to be received every year. And because of that, it's a challenge to get the American population into clinics, into pharmacies, into public health areas to receive the vaccine. And in fact, if we look at the total number of doses that are available from manufacturers, it represents only about 40 to 45% of the entire American population. So there isn't sufficient supply, but at the same time, there isn't sufficient demand. A lot of people choose not to. And of concern, at least from my point of view, is in our state of Wisconsin, only about 40% of school-age children receive influenza vaccine. And I mention that simply because school-age children have the best response to the vaccine in terms of protection, and school-age children are the biggest transmitters of influenza to family members, to baby brothers and sisters, to their parents and to grandparents. And so that's a great unmet need. Going forward, we also do a pretty poor job with adults in general, though we have seen a great increase in the willingness of pregnant women to receive the vaccine. And that's very important because not only does that influenza vaccine protect a woman who's pregnant, who basically is at much higher risk for bad outcome with influenza, but it also protects the infant after he or she is born for the first 4 to 5 months of life.
That kind of makes sense, though, because that woman is probably going to pretty regular prenatal visits and perhaps has more exposure to a nurse practitioner or physician saying, this is really important, you get this.
Well, exactly. And the biggest predictor of receiving a flu vaccine or actually any vaccine is a strong recommendation from a healthcare provider.
Oh, and that can go a long way.
That can go a long ways.
You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234, as we prepare for another flu season. Experts warn that our nation is ill-prepared, though, for a pandemic flu that could cause widespread disruption and perhaps even death. Last year's flu season, 2016 to 2017, was described as, quote, moderate. More than 600,000 people were hospitalized because of complications from the flu. We are discussing the flu vaccine with Dr. Jonathan Tempty. He practices family medicine, is on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Public Health here at UW-Madison. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Are you planning to get a flu shot? Why or why not? What's holding you back? Do you worry about the safety of flu vaccines? What about a flu vaccine makes you concerned? And have you ever gone to work sick with the flu or been worried about coworkers who you think have come to work sick with the flu? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after this news update. Stay with us. We've seen or heard the public service announcements to get a flu shot, and then there are the marketing and ad campaigns built around getting the flu shot. Here's one from Walgreens.
Getting your flu shot at Walgreens is easier than ever. Just walk right in and pay $0 with most insurance. Plus, when you get a flu shot at Walgreens, you help provide a life-saving vaccine to a child in need through the UN Foundation.
Flu shots bring in lots of people to these pop-up flu clinics and to neighborhood pharmacies. We're exploring the world of flu shots this hour with Dr. Jonathan Tempty. He practices family medicine, is on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. He served 7 years on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you planning to get a flu shot? What questions do you have for Dr. Tempty? You can join in. Let's go right away to Brandon in Onalaska. Hi, Brandon. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. So I had an undiagnosed stroke a year ago, and I usually do get my flu shot. However, I noticed on the questionnaire for the flu shot, it had mentioned something about having a previous brain injury as one of the questions. So my question is, since I've had a stroke, is it still safe for me to get the flu shot?
And the answer is absolutely safe, Brandon. In fact, people who have had things like a stroke or heart disease are at higher risk for complications from influenza in general. Oftentimes, clinics and others will come up with checklists, and the information isn't exactly correct there. So the neurological situation that in general we screen for is something called Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is an acquired paralysis. And people who have that might be at a higher risk for a recurrence with vaccines in general.
Well, Brandon, thanks for calling in with that question. Dr. Tempty, every year the CDC really mounts a concerted campaign for the flu vaccine. We just heard an ad from Walgreens. What effect has this had? Have vaccination rates changed much over time?
Well, there has been a slow and steady increase over the last two decades, and part of it has been in policy. I believe if we go back about a decade, we saw a change from influenza vaccine being recommended to specifically high-risk groups of individuals to being recommended for everyone over the age of 6 months. And as that has gone on, we found more and more acceptance and more interest in the vaccine. So this year we anticipate about 145 to 150 million Americans will receive the influenza vaccine.
Let's take another call now. Carol in Door County. Hi, Carol.
Hello, this is Carol. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to make a couple comments. One, I've been to Walgreens, and first of all, you have to walk past rows of chemicalized food products to get to the pharmacy. Number two, look at the health and wellness of the general American population, which ranks very poorly, considering, look at the, with all respect, the esteemed doctor who recommends flu shots, which can have very little to do with the promoting of health and wellness of an individual who is a person and not designed to eat, take in, and consume chemicalized foods and pharmaceuticals. I think that doctors can only promote what they have studied, and they have studied very hard pharmaceuticals.
So, do you have a question, though?
I would like to say, I'm sorry to talk over you, because you really want to know, I will not take a flu shot.
And Dr. Temte, can you respond to Carol there?
Well, I think Carol makes a very important point that things like good nutrition, good exercise, and so on can have a real important role in either preventing illness or allowing us to recover more quickly. One of my colleagues in my department has actually invested several years in studying the effects of both exercise and meditation in terms of preventing and reducing responses to colds or cold viruses and influenza. And there certainly is an important role there. That being said, each year we find far too many Americans being hospitalized and actually dying of influenza. This past year, we had about 100 children that we know about. And I will always mention this at the tip of the iceberg, because oftentimes when children die, we don't actually have a real good reason for that. But we know of at least 100 children this past year that died specifically because of influenza. And most of them had no underlying medical condition, and most of them were not vaccinated. And so this represents a great tragedy and something that was mostly preventable.
Well, Carol, thanks for calling in. Jim from Cedarburg emails. He wants to know whether the makeup of the vaccine changes throughout the season. He's also wondering about the best month to get a flu shot.
Two excellent questions. The vaccines that we have right now in October in Wisconsin are going to be exactly the same vaccines that we have in March, and April, and May. They're manufactured starting in April and May. They are usually ready to go by the end of July or end of August, but they don't change in composition throughout the year. So that one has the same vaccine, and unfortunately, sometimes we find that the viruses out there are not what we expected, and so we can have what's called a mismatch of the vaccine. The second question as to when the best time is to get the vaccine is a really good and complicated question, because we do know that there is some waning of protection, and so is it possible to get a vaccine too early? Yes, it is, particularly for older individuals that have a less robust or less active immune response to the vaccine. And so we're always playing the game in terms of how early can we get it in. And if you look at clinics and pharmacies, it's really a challenge to get all those people in and vaccinated in a short amount of time. So we start early on, for example, September, and we go, actually in my practice, I go until there's no longer much of a risk for coming down with influenza, typically at the end of April or early May.
Okay.
But if we look for a sweet spot, I tend to favor October, because it's a good month in terms of we're well before the flu season, but it also gives us that carriage or coverage throughout the entire flu season. But I can reassure you that most people will have 7 to 8 months of good protection. So those who receive vaccine in September or even late August are protected for the entire flu season. And we hate to see people who put it off until real late and happen to come down with influenza. So basically, I would argue any time from late August or early September all the way into the new year is fine for vaccine.
Talking flu shots this hour of the morning show. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is with us. He practices family medicine and is on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. He served on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices from 2008 to 2015, and he currently chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Jack now in Rhinelander. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Go ahead.
It's basically a two-part question. How effective is Lysol against the flu, especially when people that have it around you is touching you and everything? I will spray myself down with Lysol. It's don't touch me. And the second part is the wipes at grocery stores and whatnot for the handles on the carts and stuff. Are those effective also?
Very good question. And you bring up a couple important points before I actually answer the question. First of all, influenza is largely spread by respiratory droplets. So when a person coughs or sneezes while they have influenza, it can affect those individuals that are basically 3 to 4 feet away. But some of those particles, some of those droplets can land on surfaces, for example, on the handle of a shopping cart. And in fact, influenza viruses are fairly fragile. And so usually the wipes being used, alcohol-based hand wash, will deactivate influenza vaccine. Likewise, I think Lysol would do a fairly good job, but I caution against applying too much of any chemical to the skin. So, for example, we tend not to advise use of Lysol sprayed on skin or being breathed in.
Jack, thanks so much for that question. Dr. Tempty, why is it typically so inexpensive to get a flu shot? Where does the cost savings come from, especially given all of the research and development that goes into making effective flu vaccines each year?
Well, compared to a lot of other vaccines, you are correct. Influenza is incredibly inexpensive, in part because is due to the sheer volume. Some of the manufacturers are making 30 or 40 million doses per year. It's tried and true technology. Most of the vaccine we see in the United States is a chicken egg-based production, where chicken eggs are infected with influenza viruses. The viruses multiply in the developing embryo chicken, and then are harvested. And so I've at least been told that the second largest buyer of chicken eggs in the country after McDonald's is the vaccine industry.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But it's a tried-and-true technology, and we have these very large-scale operations that are able to do things relatively cheaply on volume. And even though the vaccine may change year to year, depending on the components, the technology is the same, and it just has worked very well along that line. I think part of it, too, is when you have a product that is needed on a yearly basis, the industry has been forced in the direction of low prices just on the basis of making it affordable to all.
Are there specific pharmaceuticals who only specialize in the flu shot that have built their business around the flu shot?
Not really.
Okay.
There are a couple companies that have most of their product in influenza vaccine. But you have to keep in mind that if we go back no more than about 20 to 25 years, this country really had limitation in terms of availability of influenza vaccines. And for a time, there was only a sole manufacturer. And fortunately, now we have a number of different players. This is really important because it gives us that redundancy and that backup in case there are problems with one or another manufacturer. And so early on, you had mentioned in the introduction having a universal influenza vaccine, something that could be given not every year, but every 2 or 5 or 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, that product is still years away.
And that's because the flu is continually mutating the strains?
Well, the challenge is to find a part of the influenza virus that is commonly shared by different strains and doesn't change very much over time and produces antibody in the recipient that deactivates the influenza virus. And those are really, really hard targets to hit.
Well, the flu just keeps reinventing itself, huh?
It does.
Well, you know, for many of us, getting the flu is a huge hassle. Sometimes people get sick even if they've had the vaccine. What's the likelihood that you'll come down with the flu even if you had the shot?
That's a great question. And we have 5 clinical entities across the country that work together to try and figure out each year how well that flu vaccine works. And unfortunately, we never know until about May or June how well the vaccine worked for the year before. They come up with an estimate called the vaccine efficacy, and typically for influenza vaccines, that number is about 55 to 60%. That means that with a vaccine, you have about a 60% less likelihood of coming down with laboratory-confirmed influenza compared to not receiving the vaccine. What that number doesn't tell us, however, is that even if you get influenza after being vaccinated, does that disease have a similar or less severe course? My group has done some work on this, and we find that with receipt of vaccine, even if you have influenza that we're able to confirm, in our studies, we found that there's about a 40% reduction of fever.
Okay.
And so even if you still get influenza, it tends to be milder. So it's an open question, but in general, it tends to work fairly well. But I think it's also important to understand that there are people for whom the vaccine works better and people for whom it works less well.
Hmm.
And the big group for whom it doesn't work as well tend to be older individuals, people over the age of 65. And I just have to throw out, last year in the United States, 1 out of every 300 elders, so people over the age of 65, were hospitalized in this country with a complication of influenza, which is a huge number of people. And so we need to come up with better vaccines that protect our older people in a better way.
Flu vaccine effectiveness fluctuates each year because the virus is mutating. Researchers are also questioning whether the vaccine manufacturing process might also make the vaccine perhaps less effective. The CDC estimates that the vaccine was about 42% effective last year. That means that people who got the shot had about a 42% lower chance of needing additional medical care due to the flu. Dr. Jonathan Tempty stays with us for this flu conversation. He practices family medicine, is on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Are you planning to get the flu shot? If not, why not? If you do get it each year, why do you make it a priority? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after these news headlines. American adults sick with flu cost about $5.8 billion. US with a B, $1 billion in 2015 when you add up medical visits, medication, and lost productivity. The study findings were published in the journal Health Affairs last year. That study found that adults sick with a lot of different diseases that can be prevented by vaccines, that collectively cost about $9 billion in 2015. We're unpacking this data with Dr. Jonathan Tempty. He's a family medicine physician and on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. He served on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices for 7 years. We'll go right to the phones now with your questions, starting with Mike in Coon Valley. Hi, Mike.
Hello. My biggest concern, I guess, is every year I hear, I know it's in a minority, but I hear about people who have the flu shot and end up getting so sick that they can't get out of bed the next day. And I just talked to an elderly gentleman just a couple days ago. He had gotten a flu shot, and his hips were so sore that he couldn't hardly walk. So if the flu doesn't cause flu, what does this flu shot vaccine cause to make these people have a reaction like this?
Well, very good question here. Any immunization is created to trigger off an immune response in your body. With influenza vaccines, what we're trying to do is create antibody to the likely strains that are going on. But to do this, you have to actually provide sufficient chemicals called antigens into the body that will trigger off this immune response. For older individuals, particularly over the age of 65, one of the vaccines has four times the amount of antigen compared to the vaccine we use for younger people. Another vaccine used in older people has something called an adjuvant, which is a chemical that ramps up the immune response. But in some cases, triggering off this immune response can trigger off immune responses to other things. Fortunately, for the most part, vaccines have an incredibly good track record in terms of safety. And after sitting on the committee making the recommendations for the country for several years, I walked away with the impression that the tolerance to anything in terms of a bad reaction or significant side effect is very, very, very low. These are very safe products. But an immune response can occur with virtually any vaccine. And most years when I get my flu vaccine, I don't notice anything. But every now and then, I might feel, quote-unquote, virally the next day. And it's not a flu case, or it's not the virus, but it's my immune system responding to that antigen. So these things can and do happen. Fortunately, they don't happen very often.
Mike, thanks for that question. Let's now go to Ron in Duluth. Hi, Ron.
Hi. You kind of answered my question, but I'm wondering if there are different brands of flu shot and some that might be less able to, like a senior citizen's flu shot that would have less of a effect that you just described if you use a different brand from different pharmacies.
And I have to mention that I was just in Duluth this past weekend visiting my son, who's up there at UM Duluth. Mm-hmm. Beautiful town up there. But, boy, it's a great question. And unfortunately, the answer is that for people who have less of an immune response, typically older individuals, we tend to use vaccines that create more of an immune response instead of less. And anytime we use something that is more what we call immunogenic, meaning when we provide it, the body does a better job of producing antibody, those tend to perhaps give more of that response that we're not looking for. And it could be a little bit of achiness, or it could be just something as simple as redness or pain where that injection went in. So that's the cost for providing appropriate immunity, particularly with older individuals. So unfortunately, when we use those products, we might get more soreness, but we get better protection. That being said, the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices does not have a preference for using the high dose or the adjuvanted vaccine for people over the age of 65. They just make that available as one of the options.
Ron, thanks for the question. Let's now go to Don in Eau Claire. Hi, Don.
Yes, good morning. I am going on 95 years of age. I'm cognitively sound, but I'm physically handicapped and at the present time pretty much homebound except for maybe once every 6 weeks or so. I may get transported to the clinic for routine visits. Anyway, I am currently receiving home medical care, and the nurse who provides the wound care for me offered me a flu vaccine this year. At home, since I would not be seeing my primary care physician until late November, and I thought that was going to be a little late in the season, so I went ahead and had the shot. All she had available was the weaker of the two strengths, whereas usually over the last 3 years or so, I've received the stronger vaccine with no ill effects at all. My question is, I received this injection October 13th. I will be seeing my primary care physician in late November. Would it be advisable that I receive any supplemental vaccine?
Our current recommendations are that you do not receive a supplemental. And the thing to keep in mind is the weaker vaccine you received is likely a quadrivalent vaccine containing four different strains of influenza vaccine or influenza strains. And the high dose is a three-strain vaccine. And it turns out that across the United States last year, the people who received the high-dose vaccine were not protected for what turned out to be about 21% of the viruses out there, something called influenza B Yamagata strain. And so at this point in time, I think I would say that you have good protection, that I would just leave it as is for right now. We don't have a whole lot of good evidence that doing any supplemental vaccine dosing after the initial one in a given year does you much good. So I think right now we would consider that you're adequately covered. The other thing to keep in mind is that for people who are out in public spaces less frequently, and it sounds like that might be your case, are actually at lower risk for influenza than particularly people who have a lot of interaction with young children. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and wish you the best.
Don, thanks so much for that call and stay well. Dr. Tempty, how do you know if you have the flu and it's not just a really bad cold or something else?
Excellent question, and the way you find out for sure is a laboratory test. But we don't advocate laboratory tests for everyone. The second best approach is to be aware of what's circulating in your community at any time. And for the listeners out there, have to put in a plug for our state of Wisconsin. We have one of the best influenza and other respiratory virus surveillance mechanisms in the country. We have one of the best state labs of hygiene. The Wisconsin State Lab of Laboratory of Hygiene sits in Madison, but do a phenomenal job. We have a very proactive division of public health in our Department of Health Services. And so we have a fairly good idea
what's circulating at what time of the year. And so I can tell you right now that as last week, we had 19 individuals already hospitalized this year for influenza. We've had a smattering of influenza A cases, laboratory confirmed, but it seems like it's still at pretty low levels right now. But so for a lot of people, it's just keeping aware of the surveillance and knowing what's circulating. So right now, in Wisconsin, we're seeing a lot of rhinovirus, which is a common cold virus. We're seeing some parainfluenza virus, which can make people feel sick, achy, can have fever and sore throat. But we're not seeing much influenza. But when influenza is around, the typical case for somebody who's not vaccinated is an abrupt fever coupled with sore throat or cough or both, and other respiratory symptoms, stuffy nose, runny nose, and so on. But the real hallmark of influenza is it tends to hit hard and fast. And people go from feeling well to feeling sick, usually over the course of a few hours.
Mm.
And in my clinic, the question I always use, and I also try and teach my residents this in their training, that the question I always ask people is when you became sick. And when they say, well, it was on Sunday afternoon at about 2 o'clock, I just went from feeling well to bad, that's a really good indication of influenza. When people have to kind of rub their head and go, oh, 3 or 4 or 5, 6 days ago, that's typically not influenza.
Well, Dr. Tempty, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, you're very welcome, Kate. This was a pleasure, and I'm hoping that everyone has a good year out there. Get your influenza vaccines and be well.
That was Dr. Jonathan Tempty, who practices family medicine and is on the faculty of the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. He served on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices from 2008 to 2015, including 3 years as chairman, and currently chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. This hour of the morning show was produced by executive producer Michelle Johnson and Keely Voltina. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us.